10, report from Audit Committee Chair on June 26th Audit Committee meeting. Mr. Phillips.
Your Audit Committee met on June 26th. Probably the majority of our time was spent discussing internal audit function versus outsourcing that function. The committee decided that it supported internal, being that we would go down the path, obviously with board approval, of adding a internal audit function to our current set of duties and roles, rather than attempt to go outside and hire outside firms that attempt to offer that kind of service. I think we had a robust discussion on this, and the committee was unanimous in deciding that was the appropriate approach for us to take. Gail really led that discussion. Are there any questions before we continue on the rest of the meeting?
Could you just provide a summary in terms of the things that were discussed in favor or against, in terms of just in a nutshell of what kind of things were discussed regarding that? I mean, what was the essence of the conversation regarding internal versus external?
You want to take that?
So we covered a number of different points. The audit committee has, we've had a few discussions around this topic because obviously an internal audit function is important for the organization. There's a number of different considerations on both sides, whether we use an external resource or we hire an internal auditor. I would say that an in-house person would have, when they're working on a new project or an audit of a new area, they wouldn't have as much time getting up to speed on who CISERA is and what we're doing, whereas the outside resource would have additional time and additional billable hours around that activity. I think that it was felt that having consistency in that role would also be a benefit to the internal resource versus externally. There could be transitions in staff and that kind of thing. One of the benefits of an external model is that they do have different SMEs, different subject matter experts in different areas that they could pull in and do different things. Going down this route of having an internal or an in-house internal auditor, it doesn't preclude CISERA from having specialty audits in different areas, which we would have in the future and we've had in the past. Obviously cost is a consideration with both models, but I think when it comes to the in-house resource, I think one concern is that that person does remain independent, so that they are able to objectively look at and audit the areas of the operations that need to be audited, and look at it objectively and fairly. And if they have close friendships or something like that, that's more difficult, and there could be more bias in that work. So that's one thing that we've identified as being a weakness, but I think that overall there's more strengths and weaknesses to having an in-house internal auditor. And I think keeping that in mind, I think we're going to put some, there would be some structure around that position and what the reporting looks like, what their activities look like. One concern as well is also scope creep, in that because an internal auditor gets to know pretty well the operations of the organization, that person could get drawn into, oh, well, why don't you work on this project or this project? So knowing that, I think having some good structure around that, I think that we can offset some of those issues that might arise from that type of relationship.
Okay.
I think just to add to Gail's comments, keeping the role in house gives us. Gail first felt, as did Raleigh, that we'd be able to utilize that individual on a productive basis. Going outside for something as unique and specialized as we are, and finding people that really could bring outside value as an auditor, as an interior auditor, which is going to be a very difficult thing to do. And as a practical matter, you're constantly retraining the next group of new young auditors that join that whatever firm we're using. So I think there was a general view that we could use that individual productively, that the cost would be substantially lower. We had the benefit of Todd's experience at Central Sand they're going through actually a proposal process. And
so to speak on that, not to interrupt you, John, I apologize.
Oh, go ahead.
But, you know, we did issue an RFP, and it was roughly twice as much as having an in-house person on staff. So while cost isn't everything, mm-hmm. it is a factor in the decision. Mm-hmm.
And we did also have a discussion on the how having an internal auditor would impact the compliance department that we have, because typically the internal auditor is the one doing the employer audits and as well as internal auditing. And so we talked a bit about what that would look like and why both pieces are necessary, why it's important to have an internal auditor as well as a compliance role or function, and that the internal auditor is identifying areas of improvement, you can call them, and then the compliance role helps the departments and the managers to put together tools and resources so that they're able to, you know, correct items or improve functions in some way, so that we don't just have internal audit function saying, oh, you know what, here's what we're noticing, and then, you know, we're also layering in that different level of assistance for the departments to be able to make those things happen, mm-hmm. and that can happen timely, because I think sometimes without that role, it gets added to the manager's plate, or it gets added to that department, and it's, you know, there could be additional time lag on mm-hmm. getting things implemented. So if we were to have an internal auditor, the employer audits would be performed by that internal auditor, as well as doing internal audit functions on operations here. So that would have the compliance role focusing strictly on compliance work within CICERA. So we did have quite a bit of discussion around that. And the next audit committee meeting, I'm going to be coming back with a job description for the audit committee to take a look at. We're going to be talking more about the scope of that internal auditor requirements, you know, qualifications, what we're looking, you know, obviously we want someone with really recent internal audit experience, pension if possible, you know, a number of different areas. And from what I've seen in other systems, because I did a survey recently as well, is that I do think that there's a pool of folks that we could draw from in the industry, even though there is a low unemployment rate right now.
And as far as other similar retirement agencies, how many of them have internal versus continue to contract outside?
So out of the 19 other SURL systems, a number of them have some sort of function already, you know, a number of them are on the smaller side, so mm-hmm. they don't have their own internal audit function. There are a few that have internal auditors. Mm-hmm. Orange County and Alameda County both have the internal audit model. San Diego and San Mateo have outsourced that function.
Okay.
And then in between is kind of a mix of things on, you know, either regular staff or doing some sort of auditing as a function.
Well, and the only other one reason I ask is oftentimes on other agency boards, we purposely, you know, rotate the auditors just to have a fresh set of eyes, so that, you know, someone who's auditing the wrong way, so to speak, doesn't keep repeating it or sort of ignoring the same errors. How do we address that with having an in-house internal auditor?
It's something that we'll have to take a look at. And it is something that we've done with the external auditor.
Right.
We have had that partner change from time to time.
For that very purpose. So
I can tell you the way the larger firms do it, mm-hmm. Is rotate partners.
Right.
As opposed to rotating audit firms. There is a huge coming up to speed requirement and any change of auditors. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's good. I'm not suggesting it's terrible, but it's incredibly expensive.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
And frequently you're losing the historical knowledge that any knowledgeable ongoing audit firm is going to have, mm-hmm. between its hierarchy of staff, managers, partners. So the large firms that I come out of do it by rotating partners, and it's a constant issue. There's no question that it always raises a challenge. I will say that who the internal auditor reports to is a very big deal. Do they report, for example, to the compliance officer or the CEO or the audit committee, mm-hmm. or do you try and come up with some combination of that threesome? We didn't try to get to that final answer. And whatever we pick, because we are small, contrasted to General Motors or Procter & Gamble or some such, they can have a massive internal audit department that reports to the audit committee. Mm-hmm. And that works just fine because they're large enough to do that. We obviously don't have that kind of world here. Somehow Gail has to be involved, somehow the audit committee needs to be involved, somehow Raleigh does. So that's the next step in this process of Gail putting together a job role and organizational fit for the committee to look at, and all of this would be approved by the board.
Of the survey, retirement associations, did they also have compliance personnel as well? No. Okay.
There's one system that is, that has that role, and they're doing something with it a little more actively than they have in the past. Yeah, but it's a newer, having a compliance function is an anomaly right now with the several systems.
Okay.
And did any of the other ones surveyed have like a hybrid approach where it was like every other year or every 4 years you cycle in an external auditor as opposed to the internal auditor?
Well, all of them do have external auditors that they use. That perform an annual audit.
For accounting or for everything in terms of
financial statement?
Financial justice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'd continue with
Brown. And we would continue. Yeah, we would absolutely continue.
Our outside auditor continues to play the same. Although, again, my practical experience on this, it's not uncommon that the outside auditor obtains from the inside auditor some of the schedules and some of the analysis that they might otherwise perform, and you do realize some savings in outside audit fees. So that's very much a possibility out of that, but each sort of evolves in its own way.
Mm-hmm. And the internal auditor can take a deeper dive on some of the areas that the external auditor isn't able to. Because external auditor is really looking at, are there material weaknesses, or are there significant variances or misstatements, or mm-hmm. So
okay. Any further questions on that? All right,
are you good, John?
I was just going to comment on the balance of Raleigh's follow-up presentations on the LAFCO group, no follow-up items on Children and Family Commission, and on Contra Costa In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority. In both cases, they did not have a published, I think I'm describing it correctly, mm-hmm. published salary schedule that meets the requirements of the county and underlying law and our requirements. In both cases, they corrected that deficiency and have put into place processes to ensure that in the future they will have published salaries schedules that are in compliance with the rules. Other than that, the audits found no deficiencies. And then we talked about evaluation of the external auditor. And there were a couple of items. I think in general there was a fairly high degree of satisfaction with the work of the internal auditor. I will tell you that the presentations made by the partner were impressive. He clearly understood us, clearly had a good knowledge of what their field work was, what their findings were, how they got there. He made a good presentation. The committee felt there was not enough interaction between the outside auditor and the committee, and we will try and improve that. Part of that is our issue, that we can effectively require any kind of interim meetings, presentations, updates that we wish, and the external auditor will certainly comply with that. So our intent is to do a more precise job of ensuring that we're getting the kind of ongoing feedback during the audit that the committee felt it needed. As you all recognize, we got a completely clean opinion, so it was not as though there were things happening that were dramatically inappropriate or of concern that we weren't hearing about, but we will try and do a better job of staying closer to the process as it's occurring next spring. So,
is there more value in that if there had been issues identified in an audit, for instance, you know, either significant changes that had to be made or some process change, we need to track it? I'm trying to understand that interaction and what additional contact and value there'd be if you, in a situation like you've just said, where you have essentially a clean audit and you don't have problem areas or things you need to follow up on. I mean, I'm not discouraging more frequent interaction. I'm just trying to understand what that consists of.
The practical answer is the committee, of course, is a component of the board. And if the committee and then the board, by reason of the committee's greater amount of information, determines that management is not doing what it needs to do. For example, the outside auditor says we're not getting the cooperation that we believe we need. We're not getting, the timing is not working. This is the traditional issue in smaller organizations and audits, that the that the organization doesn't meet its requirements, its informational commitments to the auditor. Okay. And the auditor is put in a position of not getting what they need in the time frame that they've scheduled out in order to get to the opinion. The board would know that, and the board would be in a position to counsel Gail and Gail's team and take whatever action we felt was necessary. Very happily, none of that occurred, but
right.
That's the rationale behind it.
Well, food. I'm sorry, Rusty. Just to follow up, food for thought. Then, with respect to an internal audit function and how that works when somebody has to raise their hand, right? And where that reporting function mm-hmm. is, if they're in the untidy business of having to say, "Hey, mm-hmm. here's a problem," kind of thing.
Yep.
You know, it's the only internal audit systems that I'm familiar with, and it's outside the scope of the retirement system, are in public agencies who literally have an inspector general or an audit function that is literally separate from the management regime and reports independently to the board. I'm not advocating, I'm just saying that's my experience with.
No, and I for larger ones, that absolutely is the norm, my experience.
Yeah.
What we're faced with is being a smaller organization, but having a massive amount, both of money and yeah. obligation.
Right.
So is it appropriate to our role and our organization to incur this additional cost on the premise that we are doing a better oversight job as the board?
Right.
That's the evolution we're in the middle of.
And the smaller the organization, the more difficult
the more difficult it is.
You know, the yes. structural setup is to ensure independence and so on. It's difficult.
Yep.
Well, we talked about it. So.
Okay.
So, I just want to discuss this. Choosing this is a pretty big deal because I think it's much easier to undo an external auditor in terms of a contract versus hiring an employee, bringing them on, and then establishing this. So I'm sensing from my person, but I'm also sensing from other members of the board, maybe this should be brought to the board for discussion on this process, because we're talking about reporting processes and all this other stuff. It's just, to Scott's point, you know, if somebody's raising a flag, what's the reporting process and all that? It just seems like it's a pretty important portion of our governance in terms of auditing, internal versus external, and then what the reporting process is.
Well, and I don't have as much of a problem of us going internal, but right now I have no idea what that's going to look like. And so I think what I don't mind us deferring to the committee saying, okay, we're going to move down this road to an internal audit, but what I think would be helpful if we brought back to the board, well, what will that look like? And these are the responsibilities. This is how you maintain that independence and the inability for someone to interfere with their responsibilities. Here's if they're going to report to the audit committee or if they report to you. Just some clear delineation.
Our next step is to attempt to pin down
exactly that.
Well, and ideally, yeah, yep. And I would say don't reinvent the wheel if you've got Alameda and Los Angeles or Orange County, sorry, not LA, Orange County doing it. Let's see how they've handled it. And I think my concern, obviously, is just the integrity of the process and that we're not saving a few dollars, but down the road we're going to realize that we went sideways and we're going to be paying a lot more with an external auditor or other fines and penalties because we failed to properly handle what we were supposed to.
And I have reached out to two other systems and received additional information on how it's structured, and I've received quite a bit of information from those other two systems, which I'll be sharing at the next audit committee, and we'll flesh that out a little more.
Okay, and then bring back to the board once you have a clear plan.
Well, the goal here is that the committee operates effectively as the it gets into the weeds, the detail.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It gets us to a recommendation to the board before any of this actually takes place. So,
well, I understand that this was essentially a discussion item at the subcommittee, or not subcommittee, the ad hoc committee level. I don't mean to bring this up and, you know, bat it around with a broom or anything like that. But it's a big piece of the, you know, if we are going to be doing external, internal, and what the reporting process, it's a big piece of stuff. And also, there's between the compliance and the auditor proposed, it seems like there's overlap. And there obviously is because our compliance officer currently is auditing our employers. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, anyways.
Contra Costa has been a lead district for a long time. I think we may be one more time here.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's a huge moving part. So I just want to make sure that we're fully aware of what's going on.
And
so,
agreed.
Yeah,
it's a big deal.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Well done.
Thank you, John. Okay, moving on.
Can I just comment on one thing before you move on?
Absolutely, Karen.
John, there was also a report about two IRS.
Oh, yes, yes,
and
yes.
The board would, I think, appreciate hearing about those.
We had there was a penalty for 2017 related to a typing error, and a penalty in 2018 in which taxes were paid one day late. These are withholding taxes on distributions where the individuals receiving the distributions, the retirees and beneficiaries, had elected to have withholding taken on their behalf. And there were penalties in both cases. In the major one was on the withholding issue. Ice Miller was brought in, made aware of exactly what happened. Asked to come back with any approach we could take in dealing with the IRS on it. I don't think we ended up with anything that we could do on that other than that we had missed a date. And Gail has put into place a structure that she believes will ensure that this doesn't happen again.
How high a fine penalty was it?
You recall? It was I think it was about $9,000 for the first one, mm-hmm. and $70,000 for the withholding one.
How many did
one
we...
One day late.
One day late, but how many, for how many individuals, how many retirees?
It didn't It didn't impact the retirees. It impacted the reporting.
Right, but the 70,000. How much? I'm assuming it was based on a percentage of what we had failed to pay. So I'm wondering, what it wasn't just one retiree that we were being dinged for.
Was it all of them?
It was the whole payment.
Normally, it's 5%. I mean, right. That's a typical IRS number.
Right. But so how do we get a day late? I mean, to me, most of us who pay our own taxes don't wait till April 15th to be in the check. How does the process has been the corrective action that needs to take place? But that's a significant amount of money, and it just seems really, from an agency this large, really kind of unthinkable that we would be a day late on a payment that's pretty significant that we all, again, I'm assuming we're, are we doing it quarterly or however often we're paying various taxes? So how did it happen without naming names, and what corrective action have we taken so that we will pay our taxes a week early instead of
there's late? Been this isn't something that should be happening, and it's something that I am addressing so that it won't happen again. There's been a number of different things that that we have done around this. One was also taking a look at all of our tax payments. When are we making them?
It just make them 5 days early or whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Because if it's a wiring transfer error or
in this case, it was a staff oversight. And so we put some things in place so that this won't happen again, as well as including
three to five people being notified. I mean, just more than just one person. So
yes.
If they're out that day.
Yeah, and we're also, it's being documented in our procedures. Okay. So if people leave or whatever, so that they, you know, it doesn't get lost for acts again. Yeah, this is not something that we want to have occur, and it should not be occurring.
It should never occur.
Yeah.
Right.
And accounting is my background, so it's something that I definitely take to heart on these types of matters.
Do we use a calendar-based tickler system? In some applications, there are programs that, if you have compliance dates, for instance, if something's supposed to happen 90 days here or 120 days out or whatever, the system will generate a set of early emails, reminders, text messages as appropriate until the item is cleared, right? So that it, you know, it's a management tool that for significant dates, for significant events, like you got to file an application by, you know, January 1, or your Form 700 is due April 1, or whatever that magic date is, the system generates ticklers by email and text or both, depending on how you set it up. Do we use anything like that?
Well, I know that we have certain, I don't know that we have automated ones like that, but in this instance, this is for our monthly retiree payroll. So it's a tax payment once a month.
Right, it's a recurring obligation, right?
And whenever you have a IRS tax payment over $100,000, it has a very tight time frame on that. And you have to also be careful of the off-cycle checks if they don't hit on that same day as well, because they have that same turnaround. So we've implemented the same tax payment for all of our tax payments we make throughout the month on that side of the aisle. So we have put in some additional things in place. We don't have an automated system that we use that's, you know, has and Henry is out today. I could have him address this on a more detailed level.
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, I'm a small business, and I believe the rule is that payroll withholding and so on is due by the third day following the end of the payroll period. I think that for a firm my size, that's what it is. I don't know what ours is. We don't need to get into that here, but I'm just saying those are recurring deadlines. So if it's in my situation, and many, it's automated, right? If you're using a service or a function to do that. If not, and it's a potential human error situation, then, you know, one remedy for that is the, you know, the knock over the head reminders that are repeated until you clear the item. It's just a, you know, it's an option if that's appropriate. Henry can think about that, I guess.
Has this happened before? Or is this the first time that this has ever happened?
It's the only time I'm aware of SSRI.
This is a $70,000 hit. It's a big big deal. But
I might just comment that the committee got comfortable in two respects on this. First was that we had dealt with outside tax counsel to determine whether there was anything we could do to reduce or eliminate the penalties. The second was that Gail, Henry, and their team had put into place the adequate controls so that in a reasonable way it won't happen again.
Okay.
And I think the committee became comfortable with that. Committee's all sitting here, of course, but I think collectively we became comfortable that we had done what could be done.
I mean, accidents happen, and we all make them. It's just unfortunate. It's this big of one, and sounds like it won't happen again.
Okay. All right. Moving on to.